evening, everybody. You know what that 70s porno music means. It means it's Monday night. It means it's Bodkins and Buffoon, Buffoon and Bodkins, however you want to say it. The Buffoon is gone. I am your boy, Bodkins. And filling in for the Buffoon, I said we need to find another Buffoon, the biggest, one of the biggest Buffoons I know, friend of the program. You can catch him on LTS on every night this week. Friend of the program, you guys know who it is, Mr. Yankee Finn, Johnny Cruz. Johnny, welcome to Buffoon and Bodkins, your first time, I believe, correct?
Yes, yes, it is actually my first time, so I appreciate it. I'm glad that that Tanner has some shenanigans to go do, so it allowed me the opportunity to be on here with you and to get to talk to Jim and to Jonathan, and of course, you know, the one and only Scott is making an appearance too, so I appreciate the invite. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Well, that a way to bury the lead, Johnny. That's right. We have two big guests, as always, joining us tonight. Jim Behringer and a special guest, because we had to have more buffoonery, Scott Cobe. Scott, welcome.
Boys. Thank you, guys. Hey, did Tanner leave you the cheese basket, Johnny?
Nah, man. The cheese melted.
Let's jump right into it, Jim. We did you had me on your podcast Saturday or yesterday afternoon. We talked night one of WrestleMania. We were texting last night about night two. I said I came on board with you, Jim. I texted you. I said, Jim, I have agreement. WrestleMania should go back to one night. I loved night one. I thought I could carry that energy into night two. Maybe I was just wrestled out or what it was, but night two was not quite as good as night one.
Night one was awesome. You and I both talked about it. Check it out, Full Press Wrestling Podcast. Nick did an unbelievable job. We talk wrestling all the time. Night one, he hit it. It was awesome. It delivered match after match after match. It didn't feel like it was boring. Didn't feel like it dragged. Every match delivered. Night two, not so much. A lot of boring, a lot of fill time, a lot of matches that could have been cut. Look, Gunther and Sheamus and Drew, hard-hitting affair was great. The women, they did a great job. Hell in a Cell was good. The main event is what it was. But I feel like you kind of take the best matches from night one, some of the best matches from night two. You can have about a 4.5-hour pay-per-view on a Saturday. Now, this is where I've changed. Yeah, everybody knows WrestleMania should be Sunday. It's the tradition. But the way AEW came out hitting hard with these Saturday pay-per-views, I'm a Saturday pay-per-view guy. Put it on Saturday, and then you could recover on Sunday.
Especially if it's going to go till, I mean, it was 11 o'clock Central Time Zone. So for you East Coast folk, man, I don't know how the hell y'all stay up for that shit. Because, God, at 11 o'clock, I'm on the struggle bus. They tailor that to the West Coast people, I feel like.
Well, we'll get into it, but I think what the main event of Sunday night should have been, it never happened. And I think that's why everybody was excited to stay up and watch it, because it was the supposed coronation of Cody Rhodes last night. And
yeah, definitely missed opportunity by WWE, hands down. Look, I know they want Roman being the milestone with Hogan and Morales and Backlund and Bruno. No one's touching Bruno, by the way. Bruno held that belt for like 6-7 years. Like, no one's touching Bruno. I know they want to hit him 1,000 days, but to me, you had all this momentum behind Cody. I know he got hurt, but he comes back, wins the Rumble. The story, you have negative one, Brody Lee Jr.'s in the house. Like, everything's, like, on Cody's side. And I don't – like, I would have been more okay with it if there wasn't so much damn interference in the main event. Like, I know it's desperation, but you and I talked about this, Nick, coming out of Elimination Chamber, is if you're going to split the titles, the desperation – I would have been okay with the ending if it was just one belt. Like, Roman's doing everything – to keep his title, Solo's involved. Like, he's trying to keep this championship, and he's just a desperate champion to beat Cody. Okay, I'm okay with that. But he beats Drew in Cardiff. I mean, everybody knew Drew wasn't going to win. He beat Sammy in Montreal. That was an opportunity missed.
Yeah.
Cody, opportunity missed. When is your product going to be this hot with such a great story?
I'm in a disagreement. I loved it. And here's why. We did not think that was going to happen. For once in a long time, they surprised me. Right? Like, we all thought going in, hey, Cody's going to win. Right? 99.9% of people thought Cody, this was, you guys said, the coronation of Cody Rhodes. I told Jim on Sunday, hey, if the Usos had won, maybe they'd give it to Roman. In fact, the Usos still lost, and they still give it to Roman. No, I didn't see it was a pitch I didn't see coming. I absolutely enjoyed it because in today's social media world, we're all on the dirt sheets and we're reading everything. They gave us the swerve. I absolutely liked it. I enjoyed it. I was surprised. Did I like it? No, but I'm not supposed to like it. I'm still supposed to hate Roman, who's the top heel in the business.
So here's what I'm thinking, okay? Cody's going to get it eventually. There's no doubt about it. They're going to give it to him down the road. I wonder.
Are they? This is still Vince McMahon we're talking about.
I wonder if you saw Raw tonight. I wonder if Jimmy or Jay is going to turn.
I said Jay Uso.
And they're going to be.
I told you that, Jim.
And the story is going to be that Jay and Jimmy know Roman better than anybody else in the whole company. They give it to Jay. Who's teased going babyface for a while now. They give it to Jay, and then Cody beats Jay on a pay-per-view down the line. I wonder if that's what they're going to do.
I could see a Jay Jimmy babyface turn, because you could see it at the beginning tonight if you're watching Raw.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't allowed in the locker room to talk to the big guy. I think something's coming down there. But again, look, everybody's, you know, with the CM Punk stuff, and this now, everybody's referencing Rocky II. Look, if you want to mention Rocky, Sami Zayn's Rocky, Cody Rhodes was a rocket was propelled to him when he came into the company last year at WrestleMania.
Cody was Ivan Dragon, right?
He beat Seth Rollins, arguably one of the top five wrestlers in the world, three times last year. I mean, like, look. I know, you know, we're supposed to hate it, Roman, but Roman had that heat that Rock had at WrestleMania 18. You know, Hogan turns face there. This is the same heat that the Rock had in Long Island when he lost to Brock. People were just were tired of it.
Yeah.
When is your product going to be at a higher value to make a switch? You know, I'm intrigued to see how they continue this storyline. You know, is the comeback story even better? Get knocked down, the Rhodes family, you know, these hard times that always come in. But to me, again, I feel like it was just a missed opportunity. The crowd was ready for it. Everybody was ready for a new champion. Cody has all this momentum. I just don't want them to kill it and kill him like they killed Lex Luger.
Yeah, that's the thing, because now you look at it, Roman, who is going to beat – who's the guy to step up and beat
Reigns? That's what Jim said. I said Jay –
I think it's one of the Usos, just because of the family thing.
Feels anticlimactic to me. Doesn't feel like a big enough star.
No, here's my counter argument. Here's what I'm gonna say to this real quick. If it was The Rock, right? If Rock would have come back and we were supposed to get this Rock Roman for the title, like it was catered, Roman's going over. So what's the difference? He's still going over now over Cody Rhodes. We're still in the same boat. They said last night in the presser, this is the third inning. So they know Paul Heyman and Roman know what they're doing as far as I loved it. I love the match. I love the inning. It still made Cody look strong. He still went out strong with the cheating, and it made Roman, you know, what's up? It was a swerve that we don't get in today's WWE, and they swerved us all.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we get a swerve. It's like the Vince Russo swerve that we would get like back in the day. But again, just to feel like everything was behind him. Now, again, you can rebuild it, but you can never recreate it. Like you can never recreate the pop that you would have got in Montreal or the pop you would have got in L.A.
Sammy was the one they missed. I said that to you.
In Montreal,
that would have been historic.
That would have been historic. Would have been awesome. I mean, they both still got their moment at Mania. I mean, the crowd still went nuts. But again, it feels like anticlimactic if it's Jay or Jimmy. You know, I'd be, you know, I think if you're going to keep it in the family, maybe Solo's the guy that does it.
Yeah.
I don't think so. He's just not ready. Too new.
I know. No, he's not ready now, but I'm saying down the road, if Roman's reign is going to continue over everybody, maybe Solo's the guy. But look, yeah, Rock was going to lose to Roman. Of course he was. Because no one believed The Rock was going to win. Everybody right. believed Cody was going to win. And that was the thing. Like, Cody was there. This was the guy. But again, because you left and now you came back, and hopefully they don't box themselves into a corner like they did, you know, when Cody was in AEW where he just took himself out of title picture. That I don't can't think happen. So. No, yeah, they'll probably, Brock and Cody will probably go over tonight in a tag match, so.
Can they extend this to SummerSlam? I mean, that's the next logical place that Cody won it, is SummerSlam.
I mean, I think that would be over 1,000 days then.
It would be.
Yeah.
I guess the 27th of May will be his 1,000th day as champion.
And they they're not doing it Money in the Bank. They're not doing it Backlash. They'll do it at – if he's going to drop the title, it's going to be SummerSlam.
Yeah, it's not Saudi Arabia who they got coming up on the 1,000th day.
Yeah, it's not going to be
Backlash.
Saudi.
We got the Puerto Rican show, Backlash.
Yeah, it's not going to be there. It's not going to be Saudi. It's not going to be in London. If he loses, it's going to be SummerSlam.
But they just missed an opportunity with 80,000 people jammed in the SoFi.
Right, exactly.
Have it huge, and they didn't do it. So
I mean, look, night two, WrestleMania, not as good as night one. I thought night one was awesome. I thought all the matches were really good. Even the quote-unquote film matches were really, really good. Nick, you and I said I thought Charlotte and Rhea tore the house down on night one.
I thought that could have been match of the year. That might have been the best women's match of WrestleMania match of all time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. I would say you could put that one up there with the triple threat with Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky. I thought that one was pretty really, really good too. So
yeah.
Yeah, the Hell in a Cell was slow, and I know that was part of because Finn got busted open, and they had to stitch him up live in the cage. Your thoughts on how slow that match started, and is it because of the head busting? Should they just let it go? Like, what do they do in that situation?
I don't think they should have let it go, but maybe they could have cut it short where Finn was busted open, wide open. So maybe cut the match short and just say, all right, we're gonna go home now and finish it up.
I don't know if you can, just considering what happened before with Shane just tearing his quad.
Yeah,
I hated the Shane with me. I hated that. I hated him coming out. I hated all of that. I'm glad he tore his AC quad. I mean, I hate to say I hate somebody getting hurt, but.
Yo, Shane's my boy. I love Shane going back to the Attitude Era. Dude's out of shape, looks old. I don't know. He's got – whatever he's doing, but like, look, karma comes around because you knew all the plans that were happening last year. But I hope he gets a speedy recovery. But I think that's why they didn't go home. I think that's why Edge stalled trying to look for weapons. I mean, it's kind of ironic that Finn Balor tries a coup de grace from like 10 feet in the air, lands on both his feet, doesn't break an ankle, and Shane does a jump and tears his quad.
Poor Miz. They've made him such an afterthought in the WWE right now. He's just a joke. He's just a joke of a wrestler right now. He loses matches quick. He got beat up twice in WrestleMania.
It was a comedy bit. I get it. Yeah. Kudos to Snoop for the impromptu, right? Him and the Miz. Kudos to them.
I mean, look, Miz made a lot of money. He knows what he's doing. Look, from where he's come from to where he is now, all credit to him. No question. I mean, look. You know, you could, whether you like The Miz or you don't like The Miz, it really doesn't matter. But I mean, look, he's had his run. I think now he's probably fading a little bit. I think he's putting over guys. We saw that, I think, when he was with, I think when he teamed up with Miz and Morrison, took on Bad Bunny and Damian Priest. Like, he's going to just be putting guys over now. I don't think he's going to be too worried about for The Miz. But, you know, Rollins, Logan Paul, man, Logan Paul's a natural in the ring. This guy he's really good.
He's phenomenal.
Phenomenal, this guy. I mean, I liked what he brings to the table as much as you, again, whether you like him or you don't like him, you have to respect his God-gifted ability to be in the ring.
Doubt. No doubt. Without question. Without question. He's not on the contract anymore. I think his contract.
No, his contract's up. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask this before we switch off the WWE stuff, because Johnny's just sitting here quietly letting us fanboys fan out.
It's all good, yo. Yeah, I have y'all fun with that, yo. It's all good.
So Endeavor has now officially bought WWE. They are the partners of UFC. Their company that owns UFC have now merged WWE and UFC and going to make they haven't even named the company yet, but it's worth $21 billion. So maybe between the four of us, we can gather up our spare change and we can buy
a sliver of it. A sliver of it.
Danny, listening. One hundredth of a point.
Jim, what's your thoughts on this thing? It looks like Vinnie Mac, unfortunately, I think, is staying on as at least CEO, but hopefully is staying away out of the creative control and lets H run things.
Well, before you go, Jim, what do you think of Vince's mustache? Did you see that thing?
Yo,
the mustache.
Look, I can't curse on live television, YouTube, whatever.
Jim. I do it all the fucking time.
that dude is one creepy looking motherfucker.
Yes, I agree.
Look, I didn't believe it. I thought like this was a joke, like Bobby Valentine sneaking back into the dugout.
That's what it looked like.
I thought that's what it was. All right, but all seriousness though, yeah. This is huge for UFC, for WWE, for sports entertainment, live events. Like these dudes are gonna make a ton of money.
Yeah.
And the sad part is Ari Emanuel. Convinced Vince to stay. Vince wanted to be gone after the sale. Like, and then he's like, yeah, we'll keep you on. Like, he wanted him to stay around because, you know, the company's good with Vince around. And, you know, everybody thinks Vince is going to go away. He's now the second highest ranking official in this new company, but yeah. Under the guy who owns Endeavor.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's not in the weeds of creative, but he's there a little bit. But it's Triple H's show. He's running it. To me, the biggest question, now obviously we know the TV rights negotiations are open for NBC Universal and Fox. To me, the biggest thing to watch out down the road is the pay-per-views, the big four, maybe big five. What do they do with them? Does WWE follow the model of UFC and start charging for the big events? Or do they keep everything on Peacock like it is now? I'm curious because I think if they go UFC route, I think they lose a lot of their audience because people will look at the card and be like, I'm not spending $80 for this crap.
Yeah, the UFC right now, luckily I stream everything thanks to Johnny. You know, that's $80 for UFC, and it's gone up every year. And that UFC says that's ESPN doing that, and so who knows? I disagree with that. I think Dana's just blowing smoke up my ass.
I think he is too.
I think Peacock owns the network, so Peacock has that's part of their stuff. They sold it to the network to the Cox. So let's see if that happens. They would lose a lot.
They would definitely lose a lot.
And as they mentioned today, they're gonna soon begin negotiations for TV deals. So I guess the USA contract is running up here pretty soon.
Fox next year. Both are up next year.
Yeah. So what's going to happen there? I mean, USA has been a great vehicle for Vince and the WWE. What's going to happen now? Is Endeavor going to step in and say, "Hey, well, wait a minute, we're gonna go to a different network"?
Well, so I think USA and NBC and all of them stay, but the one I would worry about is Fox. I've read that. Fox is not happy. They paid a shit ton of money to bring SmackDown on Friday nights on Fox, and it has not. They view it as about 20. They've lost money. They view it as a lost money. Hey, that's what happens. It's prime time on a Friday night. That's a tough.
But if you compare it to what other things have done on Fox in that slot, I think WWE's coming up ahead, especially in this last year with Roman and what we've had. Bloodline, Sammy, like people have been, they've been averaging over 2 million viewers heading into WrestleMania. That's something they haven't done in a long, long time. Yeah. And even the numbers for Raw are coming up on Monday nights. because of, you know, just because of what's being told. Cody's coming back. I think, you know, no one is, if you take the ratings aside, like the viewership, but if you look at the demo actually has done pretty well on both for everybody. And that's where, like, the main demographic. Take yourself out of what happened in 97, 98, 90, where it was like 10 million combined viewers watching. Yeah. Yeah. That will never happen again.
No doubt.
Ever.
Yeah.
No doubt.
The numbers now, they're fine. If Fox doesn't want to bid, maybe everything goes on NBC. Maybe it goes on a streaming service. Maybe it goes on, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a tremendous get for the WWE and Vince to sell it to Endeavor, because
$9 billion.
$9 billion.
Unreal.
CNBC had an interview with this guy, the Endeavor guy, and Vince together, and I think that they've got a lot of ideas that haven't been released yet that will be released. And Triple H saying they're not going anywhere. Triple H is obviously going to stay in total control of creative, so. He's been great since he took over creative. They've been phenomenal.
In what they have out of the park.
Everybody believes in Triple H. We saw what he can do in NXT. Guy knows the business. Guy's in touch with the business. Guy understands what fans want. Vince lost touch. Just was booking like it was the 80s and 90s again. You can't do that. Not in the modern era.
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Agreed. Let's shift gears here real quick. Hey, one last, Jim, what's your last image thought on WrestleMania as we wrap it up? Your last word here.
I mean, look, you know, they sent them home happy on Saturday. They did what they were going to do from the beginning, probably for months now, with Roman winning. Overall, I thought it was a great weekend. I mean, it's WrestleMania. Look, there's been other manias where I've come out and said, yo, this thing stinks to high heaven. I think it was a really good mania. I really did. I thought it was a great weekend, good wrestling weekend. You know, some matches hit the mark, some didn't. Again, night one for me was better than night two. Again, this two-night stuff, it's hard to keep the energy from one night. Go back to one night, put all the best matches and storylines on one night.
Triple H has his way. It's going back to one night next year.
Yeah.
How long have they been doing this two night thing?
Since the pandemic.
Yeah, since the pandemic. Yeah. I mean, it made sense then because nobody was doing nothing. Everybody was at home, so it was like, all right, stupid to have it on one night because nobody was going anywhere. Right. So you could have it at two nights. So it was really it was cool, and they did for what they did during the pandemic. You know, some of the matches that they had, the innovative spots, being the performance center, I thought it was really good. But now, you could tell the crowds just wasn't the same on night two. They were hyped night one. WrestleMania, it should be one night.
Yeah, I went back on it. I told you I agree. Real quick, match of the weekend.
I think I'm gonna go Charlotte and Rhea. I think that was a match of the weekend for me.
Scott, yeah,
I agree, but I think an underlying match that was really good was Dominic and Rey.
I agree with that. Entrances were sick. Entrances were sick.
They presented a really good story going into it, and they delivered, both of them, big time last night, Saturday night. So, and that program is going to continue through Backlash because it's in, what's it, Puerto Rico, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, because Bad Bunny's going to get involved.
Yep. Bad Bunny already got involved tonight, so he's getting involved in it.
Well, I think it started at WrestleMania, and now it just continued.
Yeah.
My match of the week, I'll give it to Rhea and Charlotte, but I also enjoyed the KO Sami Zayn versus the Usos. I thought that was phenomenal, too.
I thought the IC title match delivered too.
That would be my third in the lineup. I went back and watched it since I missed it live. But yeah, let's move to Jim's favorite time. It's hockey time, Jim. We are wrapping up hockey season here. I'm gonna let you guys, Johnny and Scott, fire away your questions here at Jim, since you guys don't talk to him every Monday like I do.
Well, let Johnny go first since he's been quiet.
Go ahead, bro.
The bottom part of the West. What do you think? I see Seattle is coming back down. I think they're pretty safe, but you know, you got five or six games left here. Can they hold on?
Yeah, I think Seattle might be pretty safe. They got a big game tonight, though. Later on out west, they host Arizona. That should be a win for them. That should be 2 points. But never say never. But they've been pretty good on home ice. To me, the teams I'm looking at, there's a cluster: Winnipeg, Calgary, and Nashville. I think Nashville may fade. I think they're going to fade. I think Lady Luck may not be on their side, even though they have games in hand. They have a tough game tonight against Dallas. They're trailing currently. But, you know, the big game this week, you call it a playing game. I talked about this morning when I was on Raw Mike Richards. He put out a clip talking about a playing game. This is a definition of playing game. Calgary Flames, Winnipeg Jets, Wednesday night. Find a way to watch the game, because I believe it's going to come down to those two teams. They've been battling back and forth. Winnipeg got a win Sunday. Calgary found a way to claw itself back to keep pace. It's just been real interesting because everybody expected more from the Calgary Flames this year, especially with the moves in the offseason. They really haven't quite gotten it together. Markstrom's starting to play better. Every time you believe they could turn a corner, they have a bad loss. You know, so it's going to be – I feel – yeah, Winnipeg's starting to play better and Hellebuck's playing really well. You know, whoever wins Wednesday night, I think is going to take that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. Hard to say right now. That could lean Winnipeg because they're playing well, and it's a back end of a back-to-back for Calgary. But you never know. Find a way, Flames. They're playing with their playoff lives on the line right now.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Yeah, if you got the Fire Stick, you can watch any game at any time.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you, find a way to watch that game. Definition of a playing game.
Nice. Yeah. Does anybody have a chance against Boston, bro? Like, this is ridiculous looking at the standings. They have 12 losses. The closest one is the Hurricanes with 18 losses. Is this historic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is historic. I mean, we're talking about, you know, what we saw 2018-19 with Tampa, you know, Detroit 95-96. Then you have to go back to Canadians in 76. Yeah. It was the last time we saw a team hit 60-plus wins. Again, now back in 76, it was a different time. Less teams. Right. But, you know, what Boston is doing, considering, you know, and I was on the show earlier in the year, and, you know, I've said this everywhere. Considering how the Boston Bruins were supposed to come into this season, the injuries, the lot of unknowns, just survive till everybody gets back, nobody saw this coming.
No.
And the fact that the way they're playing, Swayman, Omar, Bergeron, Pastrnak, the list goes on and on of guys and guys filling in roles. I mean, when you have Taylor Hall on your third line playing the way he was playing, and, you know, Foligno, these guys are just rallying around everybody, and they're just playing a Boston Bruins hockey. Now, can anybody stop them? The only
that was gonna be my next question. Does anybody have a chance to beat them four times?
Look, to me, the team to watch out for is Tampa Bay, especially if they get by Toronto, because Tampa, for some reason, gives Boston problems in the playoffs recently. Yeah. They just can't seem to get past them. And then when the Lightning get rolling, as we've seen in the last couple of years, and Vasilevsky gets his groove, they're hard to beat. You could look, I say it in the first round. We said it last year. Say it again this year. Toronto could score 6 goals in 3 games and win. Vasilevsky could steal 4 games. I mean, that's all he has to do is steal 4 games. But, you know, Toronto, I mean, the last regular season game I saw against Boston and Tampa, I said, if these two teams meet in the playoffs, it's going to be a low-scoring affair because these two teams don't give up much defensively. I think that would be the only team in the East that could really give them problems. I mean, New Jersey always plays them tough, but New Jersey always fades, and that really wouldn't be till the third round, and I'm not sure if they can get there just because they're so young. Outside of Tampa, I think the Boston Bruins should get through for the Stanley Cup final. I mean, if they don't win it, it's a major disappointment. Major.
But Jim, most of the teams that usually, what's it called, the President's Cup, have President's not won Cup, the Stanley Cup. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, the last time the team that's won the President's Trophy that won the Stanley Cup, you have to go back to 2013. So I think we're kind of due for a team to win the Stanley Cup that's won the President's Trophy. The way the Boston Bruins have played this year, it's not like it was 2018-19 with Tampa, where the back end of the season where Tampa just cruised. Boston's still competing in a lot of these games and fighting hard. Like Pittsburgh, then you got to go to St. Louis. I mean, to me, I think Boston's playoff ready. It's not like the resting guys. Yeah, here and there, Bergeron won't play. Marchand, hey, you're not feeling well. Okay, you stay home. It's okay. But they're still clicking. And it's not like where Tampa was killing everybody. These guys are ready for the playoffs to start. And whoever they face is going to be a tough first-round matchup. But to me, I think Boston is a team that can end that drought for the President's Trophy winner.
Is Pastrnak the runaway MVP this year in your mind?
No, Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid's taking home the Hart Trophy. Connor McDavid's taking the Hart-Ross Trophy. Connor McDavid's taking the Rocket home. Look, David Pastrnak to me is one of the best goal scorers in the game right now. He's one of the best players I've played a game. I watched him. This is how far I go back with David Pastrnak. I watched him when he was playing for Czechs at the World Juniors, and I said to somebody I was watching a game with, I said, this kid's going to be a star in the NHL. This kid's going to be good. You got to watch out for him. Whoever drafts him, they're going to be good. He's going to be a good player. Yeah. But what McDavid's doing this year is ridiculous. I mean, going to get close to 160 points. I mean, even Draisaitl, 30 power play goals this year. The Oilers are on fire right now, what they're doing. Imagine if they had goaltending.
Could Edmonton come out of the West?
Anything's possible. I mean, why not? I mean, if Stuart Skinner or Jack Campbell can get their game going, Edmonton's power play is lethal. I mean, obviously, L.A., if they match up with L.A. again, that's going to be a tough matchup. But when you have two of the best players in the world on your team, and now it's not just Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl doing everything. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins stepping up. Zach Hyman's playing well. Yamamoto. They have depth now. Matthias Ekholm on the back end. So they have a lot more depth than they did in years past. And I think the Oilers expect to go back to the Western Conference Final.
Is there anybody that you see like a dark horse making a run that nobody's expecting to make a run?
I mean, if you want to throw the Kings in there as a dark horse, I like what they did at the trade deadline. You bring in Korpisalo, Gavrikov on the back end. They're clicking on all cylinders right now. I think the Kings are a good team. I mean, you could throw the Oilers in there. I mean, you could throw the Toronto Maple Leafs as the dark horse to make it all the way to Stanley Cup Final. I mean, they got to get past the first round first. So they got to slay those demons. They have a lot of demons to slay. Because, Vancouver had their demons against Chicago in 2011, and they went on a run. So anything's possible. Toronto's got the team that can do it. I mean, look, if the Islanders get in, they're going to cause problems for whoever they face just because of their goaltending and their defense. The problem with the Islanders is they don't score enough, and that's been their problem all year. It's going to be interesting in the East because you have Pittsburgh, you have Florida. They're playing flip-flop. They're playing leapfrog. You know, nobody really wants to put the other one team out of misery. So we're going to see. It's definitely going to come down to the last couple games to see who gets in.
So Toronto never wants to see Boston in the playoffs. Boston has their number every year. Second question, the Rangers. What are your thoughts on the Rangers going into the playoffs here?
I mean, Rangers are looking really good. I mean, as much as I'm a Devils fan, but look, I'm a hockey guy, and I got to respect what they're doing. I mean, Gerard Gallant gives the Rangers back-to-back 100-point seasons. I mean, that's the first coach ever to do that. Kane's looking good. Tarasenko looks strong. Their top six is deadly. I watched that game Thursday night against New Jersey. I mean, they rang like 3-4 posts. Vanacek had to come up with some big saves. The kid line is rolling. They have depth. They have great defense. Shesterkin can steal a series. You know, look out. Rangers went to the Eastern Conference Final last year. They expect to go back like the Edmonton Oilers do. I mean, they can make a run. Again, there's nothing really settled in this Metro yet. I mean, New Jersey's 3 points behind Carolina. They technically can still get there. But I think New Jersey Rangers first round match. I think whoever comes out of that first round matchup is going to have it in tough against Carolina because there's going to be a lot of energy extended and expelled in that series because those two rivals always bang heads.
Just by the way, just to give you an update, UConn's up 36-20 in the first half. So
this game's over.
The game's over.
The game's over. The game's over.
Yeah. Yeah. 36.
I mean, we talked about it. It was the title game was the other night, man.
And they scorched Miami in that game, too. Yeah. Jim, we'll let you get out of here. I know it's getting late over there on the East Coast, my brother. We appreciate you joining us every Monday, as always. Best of luck to you. What you got going on the rest of the week?
Just watching a lot of hockey this week, just keeping it tight on those playoff races. You know, check it out. Just trying to see, you know, who's coming in. I want to watch that game Wednesday night between Winnipeg and Calgary. I'll have that on my TV because I just want to see who gets in. Check it out, the podcast, Full Press. Hockey's got everything. You know, we're rolling like deep every day. Just checking out the hits every day. Nice. With that, I mean, look, it's the best time of year. You know, mm-hmm. I'll end on this. You know, everybody talks about expanded playoffs and all of this stuff in all these sports. This is what the NHL wants, meaningful games down the stretch. We didn't want what we had last year. There's no need for expanded playoffs in the National Hockey League because these are your play-in games right now. Every point, every game matters, and that's what I love about hockey. And this is what I'm loving about this season because everything matters, and I don't need to see boring play-in games when there's the unnecessary when these games matter. You play to get in the playoffs. I don't need an expanded playoff.
Preach. Wednesday night. Got it written down, boy. I'm checking out that game.
Wednesday night, check that game out. I mean, look, you want to circle one tomorrow night, I give you one Buffalo and Florida. That has playoff implications. So many. Nashville and Vegas tomorrow, too. So Edmonton and L.A. could determine who finishes second in the division tomorrow. So look out. I mean, so many meaningful games inside the division. Check me out on Twitter. I always put up my observations, you know, what I think from the night before. I always like people input on them, whatever. But this season's been awesome. And, you know, my Devils are doing well. But, you know, I'm just loving what the sport brings right now. And it's getting the recognition it deserves.
Finally.
About time, right?
Yep.
Game 7. Biggest words in sports.
Look, Game 7 is the best in hockey. When the game goes to overtime, it's amen better. To that.
Bro, hockey playoffs are the best playoffs, bro.
Yeah.
Hockey playoffs are the best playoffs.
Without question.
April 17th, Stanley Cup playoffs start. Just get ready.
Absolutely.
Nice. Just get ready.
A little over 10 days away.
Yep. 2 weeks away. That's it.
Yeah. All right, Jim. Well, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you next Monday, brother.
All right, absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. Johnny, great to talk to you, Scott, always, man.
Great to talk to you, man. Have a good one, man.
Take care, Jim.
Enjoy the night.
Hey, before hopefully Jonathan Grisham comes on, we got to talk about my girls, the Iowa girls game last night. What was y'all's thoughts yesterday? Did you guys watch the game? Everybody's keying in on this trash-talking bullshit. What goes around comes around. Kaylin mm-hmm. Clark tries to get trash talked right back to her. I don't mm-hmm. care about this. The only part I didn't like about is, oh, girl, like chasing Kaitlyn down to talk the shit to her. But nonetheless, them refs were flat out awful last night.
Yeah.
Awful. Yeah. They had no mm-hmm. business being on a basketball court. They ruined what was going to be was already a great game, I felt like. Iowa right. got some momentum, and then that stupid technical happened. I don't know how you call a technical on Kaitlyn Clark there, and that gave her fourth foul right. when old girl from Baylor, the coach, I mean, she was absolutely going insane. I thought they should have teed her up multiple times, and mm-hmm. then they tee up old Kaitlyn Clark for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it seemed like before the game that the refs got together and said we're gonna be the team on the court. That's the deciding factor here, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah, you hate to see that, man.
Yeah, you never want to talk about the refs, and that's all everybody talked about last night was how the refs just took the game away from the players, and it's a shame.
Starting in the first quarter, it was mm-hmm. just was ticky tack, and then. I felt like they were calling – then they wouldn't call fouls that I felt like were fouls. I'm like, you called this ticky-tack right. shit a foul. Right. Yeah. Or these fans, the fouls weren't even really fouls. And then there were some times right. where I'm like, well, where's the foul there? Right. I mean, kudos to LSU. And if, when Jonathan mm-hmm. joins us here in just a minute, I'll tell him that he's a Tiger through and through. But I just did not like the ref and the bullshit technical – after we came back. And speaking of Jonathan, we'll get his thoughts right here.
Man, that's all you ask for from your officiating is consistency. If you're going to let them bang all game. If you're going to be ticky-tack, then be ticky-tack all game. You know what I'm saying? So that's the only thing that sucked about it. But, I mean, the whole tournament was awesome. You know what I'm saying? Both men's and women's tournaments was a lot of fun. So it was nice. And as far as the Angel Reese stuff, yo, I mean, it was funny when Caitlin was doing it. And not for nothing, when Caitlin waved off that one girl because she wasn't even covering her. You know what I'm saying? Nobody was saying nothing about that. So, I mean, you can't
When Caitlin Clark is talking crap to the Louisville players, nobody says that, a word.
Bro, like when she wasn't defending, she wasn't defending the one girl. She just waved her off.
She told Louisville girls, shut up, you're down 15. Right. Again, Jonathan, I said I'm tipping my cap to you, Tigers. I tipped my cap to them. I messaged you this yesterday. We went back and forth on it. I said my only beef is I don't care about the old girl Reese chase. All I said our problem was she chased down Clark and kind of got in her face. Was the only problem I had. Other than that, hey, shit talking, my friend. Mm-hmm. What goes around comes around is what I firmly believe. That's basketball. That's any sport. You're gonna talk shit to somebody. They're gonna talk shit back to you, or eventually somebody gonna talk shit to you. That's all just the way the world works. The only problem I told you is I said I had a problem with this. The bad technical and the refs were awful. And I said, you didn't they tee up Caitlin Clark over some bullshit, and then they didn't tee up your coach over she damn near choke slammed the ref and was, you know, playing hand grabbing and arm wrestling with the ref. They ain't tee her up, but they want to tee up old Caitlin Clark for nothing. When Iowa had the momentum, we cut it within 7. At that point in time, then the technical foul happened, and then I felt like that took the air out of Iowa's sails, and the rest is history nonetheless. Incredible tournament, like Johnny said. I felt like Iowa did everything they could on South Carolina. I felt like I said this in the little interview. I said it felt like that was the miracle on ice. Could they finish the story? Remember when a USA beat Russia, they had another game. Iowa couldn't finish the story because they laid it all on the line to beat the best team in the nation in South Carolina the game before. Kudos to LSU. They balled out. Mm-hmm. This was the most exciting women's tournament, and the numbers prove it. I mean, the numbers prove it. Most viewed women's tournament, and it was, I thought, a bad time slot. Anyway, Jonathan, I'm going to give you a nice rebuttal here to – you know, back your LSU Tigers, and who are national champions. And I said that they were the better team.
So not to rebut, because the officiating was bad, and I will say not just because it was bad on both sides. Could you say it was bad on more so towards Iowa because their players got in foul trouble a lot quicker than LSU's? Yes, but at the same time though, when Angel Reese got in foul trouble, LSU's bench stepped up more than what Iowa's bench did.
Oh, yeah. Girl who looks like Russ Westbrook. I don't know her name.
Yeah.
She looked like the female version of Russ Westbrook, ugly broad. I you know what? Hey, she ugly. Well, hey, I call it like I see. She looked like Russ Westbrook.
21 points by Jasmine Carson on the bench in the first half.
She killed it.
She was the bench came up bigger for LSU. Mm-hmm. But I will say, look, I'll agree with you. The officiating was bad. And someone who's from Louisiana, we've dealt with bad officiating against us. Officiating was bad. You could say, to an extent, the foul trouble that Iowa dealt with sooner than LSU did played a factor. Not disagreeing with that side of it. The technical foul that Caitlin Clark got, by the rules, is a technical foul. What you're also saying What you're saying about Kim Mulkey, she should have gotten teed up. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I'm not saying that's not what she should have gotten technical foul too. But a lot of coaches do the same thing that what Kim does as far as coming onto the court and everything like that. Do they put their hands on the official and try to get their attention? No, that's a technical foul. Should be a technical foul. I'm not disagreeing with you on that side of it. I'm not. But by Caitlin Clark doing what she did, by the letter of the rule, that is a technical foul. You cannot just toss the ball away. They warned her, too. They warned her for doing that. So she didn't get an immediate technical foul. They warned her during the game saying, you can't do that. You need to stop. And she did it again. So they had a chance. She had a chance not to do it again, but she did it again anyway. So take it for what you want on that side of it. Was that a technical foul? By the rule, yes. What Kim Mulkey was doing, was that a technical foul? Yes.
More than once. That's my point I said to you last night. You can't pick and choose which rules you're going to follow.
But they do that, though. NBA deals with that. The men's college basketball deals with that. That happens. We see that in baseball. It happens. Mm-hmm. You nitpick rules at a time. It depends on who the officiating is. They nitpick. That's just part of human error at times of sports, where an official crew will look at it and say, we're going to call this more than we do this. They did not let them play for a portion of the game. It was very, very soft that they allowed what they did. So, again, I'm old school. Play ball. Be physical, because that's what LSU wanted. LSU wanted a physical game. And I think the way they were calling favored LSU, but at the same time, it favored what Iowa wanted. Iowa did not want to be physical in that game because they know they could not be physical in that game. LSU wants to be physical. So, again, I think it was very, very nitpicky on the foul calls. I agree with you 100%. Officiating was bad. It was very bad. But it became bad on both sides because Angel Reese got in foul trouble too very early and very quick. So officiating was bad on both sides. You know, so you can't sit here and say officiating was bad only against Iowa. No, it was bad on both sides of that.
Yeah, it was just bad.
Here's the thing about it. Iowa took down the number one team in the country, the best team in the country. By the record, who was the second best team? LSU was. LSU should not have been a three seed. LSU should have been number one seed.
Yeah, second
best record in the nation. They were They were absolutely 100% disrespected by the NCAA selection committee. They were disrespected by the media. And I'm sorry, guess what? Caitlin Clark in Iowa disrespected not only LSU and South Carolina, but the entire conference. They ran their mouth about the conference, saying how soft the conference is, how weak the conference is. LSU was disrespected all year because of their non-conference schedule and whatnot and everything. But when it came down to it, LSU was the second best team record-wise in the country. They should have been a number one seed. They weren't. They were a three seed. They ran the table. And by all means, run your mouth. If you feel like you're disrespected, Angel Reese, Alexis Morris, run your mouth. Because
I agree. I agree.
And they said it before the game. They said it before the game. They didn't like the way that they were acting towards South Carolina.
I get that.
LSU was ready to go.
I think the level of how far they took it towards Caitlin Clark was not necessarily directly to Caitlin itself. I think it was more about the media running with, you know, putting Caitlin Clark on a pedestal, putting Caitlin Clark as the darling of the NCAA tournament, and basically give LSU their flowers because Angel Reese has been Angel.
I am going to stick up for Caitlin Clark here. She was the darling. She is the darling. She is the star player. She moves the needle. Two games, those two final four, last three games that she played in, blows every women's game out of the water viewer-wise.
Everybody seems so shocked about what Angel Reese did in the tournament. She's been doing that all year.
Yeah, led the league in double-doubles.
So why is she not talked about as the best player in the country?
Why? Because she ain't must-see TV. She ain't must-see TV like Caitlin Clark.
Shoot.
A lot of girls, a lot of girls get double-doubles.
Because she can.
Not every girl does what Caitlin Clark can do.
Not everybody's shooting from the logo and shit.
Just like Steph Curry, Jonathan. Right. Steph Curry, everybody loves Steph Curry. Why? Because he does shit that people just can't fucking do. And that's Caitlin Clark. Shit that you just can't do. You double her, what'd she do? Boom, I'll dump her. You know what? I asked this question. I said, how do you stop her? They found a way to stop her. Mm-hmm. The refs gave her four fouls, and then she couldn't drive to the basket and create things. That's how they stopped her. LSU is the darn. She moves. She's the needle mover.
So Caitlin Clark does things that nobody else has been able to do in women's college basketball. How many women's college basketball players had 32 double doubles in their season? In a season, how many had 32 in a season?
I get that.
You can't tell me she hasn't done things that nobody else has done. Nobody else has done. Angel Reese deserved to be not only considered the best player in the country, she should be in the conversation with Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark. She wasn't. The media did not talk about her.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
So by all means, She should be in that conversation, and she was not. The media portrayed Caitlin Clark as the darling of the NCAA tournament because she was the most talked about. But instead, give Angel Reese her flowers because that girl played her ass off all year and was one of the should have been in the conversation of Player of the Year by the AP, by the, you know, the Wooden Award. She should be in that conversation. She was not. She has been disrespected, just like LSU has been disrespected all season, just like Kim Mulkey has been disrespected all season. And the LSU Tigers showed that they are not only one of the best, but they are the national champions and they are the best team. They should have been in that conversation from the very beginning.
I give them their flowers, and I'm going to say this. They're the better team. Caitlin Clark has got Caitlin Clark, and not so the talent level after her is very thin on that Iowa team. Cezanne's good, but how good is she? She's not as good as compared to anybody else.
Right. The girl Martin's not a bad. I mean, they got some good shooters, Iowa.
Good players. But the talent level, you look down the roster is what I'm saying.
To me,
LSU head and shoulders above.
Yeah.
Put LSU roster up against Iowa's, and you give the edge to LSU.
When you got to be physical against those shooters of Iowa, you threw them off. It had to be the Caitlin Clark show. At that point, you let Caitlin get her 30 points. Right. Alexis Morris did a damn good job on trying.
They did a hell of a job.
And she still got 30 points, but everybody else couldn't do what they needed to do. And getting in foul trouble. I'm sorry. I mean, that's part of it. They got in foul trouble.
Agreed. I agree with that too. I agree with that too.
It was fun, man. I had a fun time. I didn't have a dog in the race, and it was a fun tournament, man.
It was the most exciting tournament, females tournament I've ever been a part. Like, and maybe because I had my this was the first time I really had a dog in the race, and my dog was really good. And we had the best dog on the team, but the rest, you know, I knew it would take a Herculean effort for her to get us there, you know.
Just think about this.
She did that twice.
Right.
Yeah, think about this. That was the highest score in NCAA women's final game in history. History. So both teams were really, really good.
10 million viewers. That's the most viewers ever for a women's game. And I thought the game should have been later in the day. I thought it should have been at 7 o'clock Eastern time zone.
It used to be an 8 o'clock game on Sunday night.
Tuesday. It used to be on a Tuesday. I thought it was after the midweek.
It was going to be a three, and they put it in the afternoon because they were not going to interfere with Sunday night baseball on Sunday. That was the issue why they put it in the afternoon.
You could have went to 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
The viewers, 10 million. My buddy looked this up because we had the same conversation. It was like, you know how many viewers for baseball was last night? It wasn't 10 million. Imagine what the number would have done. ESPN screwed the pooch. Should have just waited. I know it was opening weekend, and we'll talk baseball here in a second. I know it was opening weekend, but, I mean, it wasn't 10 million viewing on baseball. Not even Yankees Red Sox gets 10 million, all right? So, I mean, 10 million. If they move that to higher, that could have been 15-plus, I felt like.
Let's put it this way. The women get disrespected. If the men's championship game was Sunday night at 8 o'clock, Major League Baseball would not have played a Sunday night game. But because it's the women, they played a Sunday night game.
I think the women's game is going to be higher rated than tonight's game.
I would say so. I agree with that.
Because there ain't nobody's watching it now.
It doesn't help that it starts at 8:30 Eastern time.
There was a lot of momentum going into that Final Four with the women, though, man. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of stars in there. You know what I'm saying? Angel Reese being one of them, Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark. Like, it was nice, man. It was a good Final Four. It was a lot of fun, man. That was a lot of fun. To Jonathan's point,
nobody was talking about LSU in this game.
I never understood that, dude. I agree.
They were a hell of a team.
Respect
Kim Mulkey. Kim Mulkey called her shot. She said, "We're going to get a national championship banner in Baton Rouge. We're going to do it." Got to respect Kim Mulkey. She should be considered one of the best coaches in college basketball.
She got kicked out of that damn game, is what I think, but I respect her.
Transfer portal and NIL is changing, you know what I'm saying, the landscape of college basketball, man. So there's gonna be a lot more people going to LSU and stuff. Watch, I'm telling you.
You are 100% right.
She's a great coach, man. She's a great coach.
You're seeing that. you're saying that not only in the college basketball world, as far as women's college basketball, you throw in Kim Mulkey on that, but it's all LSU sports. I mean, I'm not trying to be a homer right now, but you got the best college baseball team. You have an up-and-coming football team that, you know, the fan base, the facilities rival the professional sports facilities. I mean, LSU is and they were one of the – I'll put it this way as well to kind of help educate y'all. When NIL became a thing, LSU put an investment part of their athletic department. They have an entire department of NIL, people who are hired and basically just help advise these athletes to do NIL and what they need to be able to do. They have they were one of the first college programs to be able to put together an NIL athletic department program in place. So they've been ahead of the game in this aspect of it. So now you have like Angel Reese, who's going to be probably one of the highest paid NIL athletes in college. You have the gymnastics. You have someone in the gymnastics program in Olivia Dunn, who is the highest female athlete in NIL currently right now in college sports, that they're changing the game to what it's going to be. And you're going to see it. And they're not the only ones. I'm not going to just say LSU is the only one. You have every top program has become doing this as well. So you're going to see you'll see in the next 5 years. I'll say this in the next 5 years of all sports, NFL, MLB, NBA, women's college basketball, so on and so forth. You're going to start seeing a lot more kids end up going to college because of NIL, because of what it's providing these kids with the opportunity, especially in the non-revenue sports, that they're just basically going to take off and be able to become millionaires in school. That it's just going to put everybody at a whole different level. And I'm speaking this way because I hate the NCAA. I hope it helps the NCAA implode because they don't know what they're doing and how to stop this or how to control this to the point where you're going to have the Power Five conferences come together and say, screw you, NCAA. We're going to go do our own thing, and we're going to let our athletes be able to market themselves, make money doing it, and guess what? We're going to reap the benefits in the process to it. I hope it helps the NCAA implode to the point where they just are absolutely blown out of the water. They don't know what they're doing.
I think it's
going to be well said.
Sooner than later. I mean,
you sound like a homer, but it'll be all right. let's switch to baseball before we preview the AL East. It's our last division.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. And we got Red Sox and the Yankees representatives. So, Jonathan, was there anything over the surprise of the weekend before we preview it? Anything that surprised you? I know it's just a couple games. Any surprises for the first week, half, three games, I guess, whatever the hell you want to call it, weekend?
As far as just in general, I know what's bothering me is I knew it was going to happen, the conversation of the pitch clock and how the games are shorter. We have now completely taken focus off the games itself and just talking about the pitch clock and how much shorter the games are. And people are conversating about, well, this has made the game better. But we're taking conversation out of the game itself. We've taken the conversation as far as what the games are supposed to be. Opening day does not have the same meaning in my book that it normally does because we're not talking about the games. We're not talking about what the season has begun. We have talked about the pitch clock more and more and more. We're talking about the different rules that have completely changed the factor of the game. And I feel like I'm saddened by that because the game itself is supposed to be like opening weekend should be a national holiday weekend. It should be a national holiday for opening day. It's a celebration that baseball is back. And I feel that we have lost sight of that because all we want to talk about is that games are now 2 hours and 25, 2 hours and 30 minutes, how much shorter the game is and how much better that allegedly makes the game. It's taken in my view, I feel like it's taken a lot of luster out of baseball's opening weekend that we just not talking about what's going on. Rangers sweep the Phillies. We had, we had good baseball in Chicago, as far as with the Cubs and Brewers, it was good baseball going out there with some of the things that was going on.
It's not good. We lost 2 out of 3.
It was still good baseball, just not for your team.
My Braves took 2 and 3, so I guess I was happy about my Braves doing what they were supposed to be doing against the Nationals. But you had a lot of – you had surprises that took place as far as, like I said, Rangers sweeping the Phillies. You had the Diamondbacks split with the Dodgers and be able to do what they did. Padres struggled out the gate as well. I mean, you had some, like, surprises as far as the game itself, but we're not talking about the games. We're talking about the damn pitch clock and how short the game has become.
Jonathan, I think that'll go away after this week. I think people forget about it. It's just the new thing, right? Like, that's my opinion on it.
But then I hope so.
I hope so too, because when I watched the Red Sox game and Devers came up, the only thing the announcers kept saying was, well, if this was last year, he would have hit a ground ball to the second baseman because the shift would have taken effect. That's what you heard all weekend with the Red Sox Orioles series was that stolen base.
Yeah, I think announcers and stuff, they need to get past it too and just call the damn game. You know, say don't constantly bring it up as well. I agree with that too.
They're not gonna stop bringing it up because they have to keep talking about it because it's a talking point. This season is talking point. It's not about games. It's about the new rules. So you're going to hear the new rules talked about the pitch. Like they're going to say, hey, what do you think about by the fourth inning of every game until July, you're going to hear, what do y'all think about the pitch clock? How about the shorter ball games? How about this? How about that? Hey, the new rules have really been kind of helping things out about the game. They're trying to sell that to those to the newer fans that are watching the games, they think that are watching the games, to say that this has made the game better. They have to continue talking about it to sell the product being better. Yeah. With this new rule. So you're going to hear this. It's not going to go away for any time soon.
That's a shame, too, man. There's some good storylines. There's some good games, some good teams, man. So
let's go ahead and jump into the last preview here. I don't have the thing that Tanner has and bring it all up, so I'm just going to go off the top of my head here. We'll start from the bottom of the teams here. Let me hold on. Now we're gonna
the Orioles and Blue Jays are both 1-2, bro.
Yeah. So we'll start with the Orioles. The upstart Orioles last year almost made it to 500, almost made the playoffs. What's your thoughts here, Jonathan, on the Orioles?
They're going to be an exciting team. And I know you said they kind of started off a little bit slow in the opening weekend, but they're going to be an exciting team. Adley Rutschman is the real deal. He is the real deal. He is the future of catcher of the catcher position in Major League Baseball. And I think that if you're Oakland, if you're a Baltimore Oriole fan, you are doing everything you can to go see him play and see what he can become in his career early on right now. They're going to be the darlings, kind of that surprise team. And I say a surprise because they were the surprise team in 2022. I think they're going to be the surprise team that can kind of become that contender, kind of like what Seattle was last year. Seattle was not expected to be a contender. They made a move or two to really become that contender status and make that jump for it. Now is the year for Baltimore to do the same thing. I think they have a good core group. Cedric Mullins in the outfield is a good piece that they've truly said we're not trading it. As many times there was conversations of Cedric Mullins being in trade talks, they said they're not trading Cedric Mullins. He is a core piece that they're going to continue to build around with Adley Rutschman thrown in as well. They probably need to make a couple moves here and there, at least with the pitching staff, to challenge in the AL East. But I think they're going to be a team that's going to hang. And if they are hanging around by the trade deadline, they make that move necessary, kind of what Seattle did last year. You can see this Baltimore Oriole team be a contender for at least a wild card. I don't think they're going to challenge for the division this year, but I could see them make a wild card position, a wild card challenge this year that will elevate them in 2024 to be a contender for the division. So that's I see that they're going to be exciting, and they've shown it so far. They're a very exciting team.
I made a comment that I thought the one thing that Baltimore didn't do was to get that one experienced kind of front of the rotation starter to kind of help that team out since they were so young. Do you think they would actually make the trade at the trade deadline for that frontline starter?
I think they will because they have a deep farm system. So, no, they were not going to sign anybody because, again, the money's not there in Baltimore to go and sign the top three pitchers or top four. They weren't going to go after Carlos Rodon. They weren't going to go get Jacob deGrom, obviously. So the money-wise didn't make sense to go get a free agent. And there wasn't a lot of movement on the trade market this offseason.
I was going to say no trades.
For that. But with the season going, and there's going to have some move. There's always movement at the trade deadline during the season that I could see Baltimore, if they're within five games of the wild card at that point, kind of what Seattle was, they'll make a move to get a top of the rotation guy that can elevate them. I don't see how you cannot. Even if your rotation, even if they believe in their young rotation and they're doing really well, they're pitching, getting a difference maker means that much. Like I said, Seattle was the prime example. They traded for Luis Castillo, and my goodness, it elevated them to that status of contender for the postseason. They made it to the postseason. Now, then the next year here in 2023, there are talks about challenging the Astros for the division. That's where the Baltimore Orioles are at right now.
Yeah, it's just a tough
game. Sorry.
But I love the young talent. I love Rutschman. I love Gunnar Henderson. I love Cedric Mullins, who's, you know, he's not on the young talent. But then they got their stud pitcher in the farm system ready to come up when he starts pitching well. So, you know, they're in line to do some damage in the AL if they can just keep their heads and hang in with these teams.
Yeah. Let's move to your team, Scott. I pick a team I think everybody thinks is probably going to finish dead last, and that's the Boston Red Sox. Jonathan, how bad are these Red Sox? Scott said on my show on Thursday that the water boy and you know, the peanuts,
the Mexican food guy,
the Mexican food guys out there playing for the Red Sox. How bad are the Red Sox? And what the hell happened?
I even said I think it was over the weekend. I said, hey, I'm available to go play first base. If they need somebody, I can go. I still got a game. I don't know what happened, honestly. I mean, again, they made bad moves. Mm-hmm. You know, when you make trades and you lose guys like Mookie and you lose Xander Bogaerts and you make these moves that you're trying to bring younger prospects in and you hit and miss on those prospects, you are setting yourself back years. And that's what happened so far. They are set themselves back years. And then throw in the fact they lost JD Martinez as well, who was still a really good hitter in his mid-30s. He was still producing, and you lose him in the process. I mean, they have not made smart moves of what they were. Questionable that you don't sign Xander Bogaerts. Questionable because, again, you're Boston. You have money. You have the money to keep these guys. They've proven it in the years. And they, you know, again, you're one of the biggest markets in baseball. You've been a high payroll franchise for the last 20, 30 years. So I don't buy in that, you know, you're saying we don't want to spend the money on someone like Mookie Betts. You don't want to spend the money on Xander Bogaerts. But you then go turn around and you pay Rafael Devers. You know, why couldn't you keep, let's just say, if you can only keep two of them. All right,
Mookie.
Absolutely. Then you sign Mookie Betts, you lose Bogaerts, right, and say, hey, we'll go from there. We'll have our two pieces that we're going to build around this team. Right. And go. You made bad moves. You made bad decisions. Chris Sale has not been a success for this franchise. So they have made horrible decision after horrible decision after horrible decision. Signing Devers, I don't have a problem with that because you have to sign somebody to put the fans in the stands at Fenway Park. Otherwise, an empty Fenway Park is not a pretty sign for the front office and the ownership group as well. So they've made a lot of bad decisions. They have missed on a lot of prospects that they've traded for in that time being, and it's just absolutely set them back, not just for the last couple of years. It's going to send them back for at least another 5 years in the process.
So we lost to the Pirates tonight.
Tough times, tough summers there, Scott, in Boston. You got anything to say about your Red Sox?
Their offense is going to be fine, even though they lost Bogaerts, and they're going to be fine. They got the Japanese import in. He hit a home run. They're going to be fine. They got Kiki Hernandez, who not the greatest in the world, but he's a serviceable guy. They got Justin Turner, signed him. They got Devers, obviously. Cassis, the rookie. So their offense is probably going to be fine. It's their pitching staff. You let Nate Eovaldi go, okay? You got Chris Sale, who's pitched, what, 40 innings over the last year and a half? You're paying him millions of dollars. You signed Corey Kluber, and he looked terrible in the opening game. So, to me, you've let your pitching staff go. As soon as they won the World Series against the Dodgers, they basically said, okay, that's it. We're happy with all this. We're just going to start slowly and slowly tearing it down and then rebuilding it up like 8 years later. And it's not working. Chaim Bloom's done a terrible job for them. Terrible job.
So saying the offense is fine, good enough in the AL East?
No. No.
There's a problem there.
Yeah, they scored. They're the third team in Major League Baseball history to start the season with 9 runs in their first 3 games. Okay, but your pitching staff has given up 7 to 12 runs. Their offense, if they struggle against good pitching, they're gonna just sink right to the bottom big time. They haven't faced any good pitching yet, so I'm waiting until they face the studs that are coming to see what they do against them. Justin Turner's 37 years old. Okay. He's not a great, he's a good hitter, He's not a great hitter. He's not going to replace JD Martinez. Trevor Story's out for the year, basically. That's a guy they signed to big money. He's gone for the year now with his elbow. So you're losing him. So you're basically throwing millions of dollars. If Sale gets hurt, you're basically throwing $50, $60 million this season away. So I don't like what they've done at all. I really don't.
The beginning of the end was Mookie, man. I was so happy that you guys got, traded Mookie. Because he's just a phenomenal baseball player. That was the beginning of the end, in my opinion, for Boston when they let Mookie go, when they traded him. Come on now.
I agree with that.
Yeah, they couldn't give him $400 million? I mean, come on. He would have stayed in Boston if he offered
him. Boston's got the money, man.
They
Boston's
do.
Got the money.
Oh, yeah. No, they don't. They gave it to Chris Sale and Trevor Story. And...
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if you don't give it to Story and whoever, you got Mookie there still.
I think the Story signing,
right field.
And I don't know if Johnson's going to agree with this. I think the Story signing was a panic signing last spring training.
Yeah.
100, I do agree with that 100%. Again, Trevor Story was a good ball player. I think he was overhyped. He was overhyped because of where he was playing at in Colorado. Yeah, you have guys struggle when they leave Colorado. The only one is the exception right now is Nolan Arenado, who's doing unspeakable things in St. Louis. But he's been the exception to the rule of those Colorado players. Yeah. Trevor Story, he was overhyped, and they thought that he can do the same thing in Boston and be the player that he was. But the problem was the last couple of years in Colorado, Trevor was actually on a downward spiral. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the next great shortstop. He was becoming just a good shortstop, and they paid him to be, essentially a second baseman. They paid him to be a great shortstop and playing him at second base. And that made no sense. It made absolutely no sense. If they knew Bogarts was gone and they signed him to that and say, we're going to move Story to short, okay. But at the same time, as Scott said, it was a panic move to make sure that you had a replacement for Bogarts, because that's what he was going to essentially be. But the problem was he was not to that level that they thought he was going. He was, because he was overhyped in the process.
And last thing I'll say about them, Johnson's right. As soon as they signed Story, Bogarts was gone. Bogarts was gone.
I think Bogarts is the better player.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
no question.
And I was worried when you guys got Hein Bloom, but good job, bud.
Let's move to the Tampa Bay Rays. It seems like they never spend no money, but they're always right there. That pitching staff is really good, Jonathan. What's your thoughts here on the Rays?
I think you're going to see this team be an electric type of ball club. They're fun. They're young. They're exciting. You have Wander Franco. I think he's a superstar this year. He's going to step up and be that superstar that Tampa hasn't really had. Again, you can probably talk about Evan Longoria was kind of that. A little bit of the baggage that followed Longoria. There's a lot of stories I've heard about him that I'm not going to, I won't divulge right now, but Franco is the real deal. And I think they paid him to, right off the bat, and say, we're going to build this franchise around you. And they finally have somebody they can do that with. And the pitching staff, as you said, it's a young pitching staff. They have playoff experience from the last couple of years and everything. They haven't had the success in the postseason that you were hoping to have, but they are a fun, exciting team. I think it's just, I hate that where they play at. I hate that they play in St. Petersburg and in that stadium. I hate that they have that fan base that doesn't appreciate what they have there. But at the same time, they're a fun team. They're an exciting team. I they're a dark horse team for me. They will challenge the Yankees. I think that's the team that's going to challenge the Yankees a little bit more so this year. They may fall short, but they're going to be a fun team to watch and really throughout the entire Major League Base, not just the American League, but they're going to be fun to watch the entire MLB.
I'm completely with Jonathan there. Everybody is on the Toronto bandwagon. Nah, man, I think Tampa, if Tampa stays healthy and the kids meet their potential, Tampa's going to be a problem.
The two guys that impressed me in Tampa, Randy Arozarena and Jeffrey Springs. Mm-hmm. He is dominant. He was dominant yesterday. If he could pitch half the way he pitched yesterday, that's their next stud pitcher. And they have a great pitcher.
I was about to say, and they have more. in the system too, man.
Yeah, I know, and they got more coming too. So they know how to draft, and yeah, they know
and develop
to bring these guys up. And Kevin Cash does an outstanding job with that organization, uh-huh, on the field, off the field. So.
Yeah, Randy Orozarena, he probably can be an MVP candidate if he plays like he did in the WBC and continues that kind of play. My goodness, I mean, will he get the MVP votes? No, because he plays in Tampa, and they're not going to talk about him. But he's going to be, if he can continue that trend, he should have an opportunity to at least be considered an MVP candidate, because my goodness, that was amazing to watch him play for Team Mexico in the WBC.
And then we got the two more teams here real quick. We got the Blue Jays. Johnny mentioned a lot of people are on them. I'm always been kind of high on them. Love Vlad. It seems like, can this team go with Berrios? Can he add that frontline pitcher, Jonathan? What's your thoughts here on the Blue Jays?
I'm torn with the Blue Jays because I picked them last year to be a World Series contender. At some point, and they have been talked about. They've been talked about overhype as far as players wise. Toronto has been hyped up to be that dark horse World Series contender for the last couple of years, and they have not been able to. They haven't really been able to to take the hump of winning the division from the Yankees, let alone put themselves in that position to be a World Series contender. So I'm not as high right now because I haven't seen it. I haven't seen them do it. They haven't put it all together. They continue making move after move after move to say we're all in. You have a lot of good young pieces. You brought in superstars. You brought in players like George Springer to help elevate from a World Series team like the Houston Astros to elevate this team to that next level, and they haven't taken that full step yet. So until I see them do it, I'm not buying into Toronto. I feel like the hype is too much. They haven't really fulfilled that hype. So they're going to be a good team. They're going to be in it, throughout the season. They're going to challenge the Yankees. They're going to challenge the Rays. But I'm not buying the stock just yet until I know for a fact that this is a little bit different for them. It's almost like the New York Mets. You want to buy the stock early because you hear the hype about them, but they haven't done it when it matters most in the second half of the season. So I'm holding out on saying that they are that team. They're going to jump and be a World Series contender until I see that this is a different year for them.
Yeah, their pitching staff worries me a lot. I mean, Berrios was terrible tonight against Kansas City. He's just picking up where he left off last year. I just don't like their pitching staff at all. I think they're going to be the reason why Toronto either gets in the wild card game and loses or doesn't make the playoffs at all.
So. Yeah, we talked about this the other day. I think he's the key to me. If he can actually find it and get to the next level, Berrios, then I'd be a little more worried about Toronto. But they remind me of San Diego. There's so much hype about San Diego. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe it with San Diego. So they can have all the superstars they want. They don't do anything. So I feel the same way about Toronto. They got so many good young players. But I agree with Jonathan there. They're getting a lot of hype. But until they actually do it, I'm more worried, like I said, about the Rays and possibly the Orioles if they make a move. Because I'm worried – because the Orioles have the farm system to go get Mr. Burns out of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. So I'm worried about Baltimore. You know what I'm saying? Toronto, we'll see what happens. They're gonna wind up having to like split up Toronto. It's gonna be crazy. If they don't do nothing this next year or two, they're gonna have to start dismantling it. That's crazy, bro.
Well, but that's the problem though, and I agree with you to an extent that if they don't win this year, they're gonna sell off on pieces. But who are you gonna sell? You're not selling off Vlad Guerrero Jr. You're not gonna sell off on both. They're too young. They're pieces that you build around. They're still. I mean, again, if they were late 20s, early 30s, then yes, you're probably looking at them and say they're not. You're not part of the future. We'll sell off on you, and we'll go in a different direction. You know, George Springer, I think, could be one that you look at and say, hey, we're going to go in a different direction. He is a little bit on the older side on that group. But you have where do you sell off? Where do you start over? Because again, you have young pieces and young players that you're building this team around. So there's going to be I agree that there's a direction change coming if they don't win this year, if they don't win the division this year and put themselves in a position to be a World Series contender, change is coming. But where is the change coming from? Because if you do trade, let's just say they trade Vlad Guerrero Jr., my goodness, they're going to riot in Toronto.
They can't trade. So you think they just change managers? You think they just get rid of the manager?
They change managers every 2 years.
Just got a new manager.
That's what I'm saying.
They've kind of done that already. So, I mean, like, you know, you've kind of gone through the front office and gone through the coaching staff. So you have to, at some point, you just make the move that you're selling players. So that's going to be the question is, do you trade? I mean, again, we hear this from talking about with, you know, Ohtani being traded. We hear about, you know, at so many times when Trout was still in his prime, and I hate saying that he's not in his prime right now, but in his early, you know, mid, you know, late 20s, talking about, hey, Trout might get traded from the Angels. Yeah. I think look at it and say you may have to consider making a move of trading Guerrero Jr. and trading Bobichet and saying we're gonna rebuild and start over. I mean, imagine the trade pieces you get. Imagine the prospects you get for Vlad Guerrero Jr. Yeah. You know, you don't think you can rebuild in 2 years with that kind of that haul you get back?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Then we got the last team, and that's the Johnny's Yankees. Johnny, if the Yankees don't win this division, I mean, you're going to riot, or is that what's happening?
Nah, man, I'm not one of those kind of Yankee fans. I'm not going to riot. I mean, I expect them to make the playoffs. Excuse me. I expect them to compete for the division. The main thing with the Yankees is health, man. If they can stay healthy, they got a good team. I think they'll win a lot of games. I'm already worried about the pitching staff. 60% of the pitching staff's already on the IL. I like what the young kid Johnny Brito did yesterday. He pitched a good game, but to have to depend on all these young kids in the pitching staff worries me. I do not like the way Aaron Boone uses the bullpen, so I'm a little worried about that. But I mean, if the lineup stays healthy, we'll be in a lot of games, just, you know, offensively. But we got to stay healthy in the pitching staff, man, because without that, we have no chance, man. Pitching to me is everything, so we'll see.
Jonathan, can this Yankees team, I mean, they're the clear-cut favorite?
I mean, when you play your home games in a slow-pitch softball stadium, I mean, I'm sure you're going to be a favorite because you're going to score a lot of runs and you're just going to hit the ball as high in the air and it'll carry out 320 feet and – you know, your power numbers will be ecstatic. So I kid, because I'm a diehard Yankee hater. I forgot my Yankees suck T-shirt at home today, so I was gonna bring it and wear it for the show. They are the clear cut favorites of this division. Again, the offense is what's going to carry this team. What Johnny said as far as the pitching staff and the health of the pitching staff is going to be the biggest key. Can if they stay somewhat relatively healthy, they have a chance to win the division. If they miss, if you have guys that miss a lot of time, and I already know, again, you know, three guys are already down on the IL right now, which is fine in April. It's okay to miss those guys now. If they're missing time again in July and August, I think you're going to be scared because this division is tough. You have, you know, really good teams that are going to contend. They're going to push. They're going to challenge. And again, pitching for, we talked about the Tampa Bay Rays, their pitching staff is electric. You have a good staff. You have, you know, so you're going to face teams that are going to come and out. They're going to out pitch you. It's a matter is the offense carrying this team as long as possible. Talking about the health of the pitching staff. It does have a question mark as far as how long your guys of Judge and Stanton, Rizzo, how long are they going to be able to stay healthy throughout the season, too? How many games will they miss? Because you know they will miss games. They're going to have oblique injuries. Stanton and Judge have a long history of oblique injuries.
Rizzo's had a history of back
injury, too. So if you have a point where, you know, let's go look at it this way. If you're the Mets, where you're having your two top guys of Verlander and Scherzer down at the same time, what that's going to do, if you have those three guys of Judge, Stanton, and Rizzo on the IL at the same time, that is a huge
we're done. We're done.
You're going to lose a lot of ball games in those cases. Yeah. So it's going to be timing. I think that's the biggest key for this team is, you know, timing of when their injuries occur, because we know their injuries are going to occur. It's a matter of when. It's not if. when they occur, and how long can they sustain those injuries when they do, when it does occur?
Yeah, for me, it's Rodon, Severino. When are those guys going to come back? Are they going to come back in early May, or are they going to come back in June sometime? And if they come back in early May, the Yankees will be just fine. If they come back in June, you got to worry, because Rizzo's not going to play every game from now until then. Stanton probably is going to get hurt. And then there's this whole mystery on Josh Donaldson. I mean, it doesn't look like he's doing anything this year. He's about ready to get replaced, I think, you know, if he keeps up the struggle. So to me, it, you know, when you're asking Volpe, a young rookie, to hit at the bottom of the order and try to be as successful as he possibly can be. So there's some holes in that lineup if one or two of these offensive guys go down. So it's all about health with the Yankees. If they stay relatively healthy, they'll be fine. If not, a team like Tampa Bay, who's got a great pitching staff and always has, is going to sneak up and take that division away from them. So,
yep.
Before we get out of here, go ahead, list these teams in order. You're from bottom to top, Jonathan. Who you got from bottom to top in this division?
From bottom to top, Boston Red Sox will be last place. I just don't know what their roster is going to be and where their direction is. And as Scott said, you know, they've settled on their World Series years ago, and they've just kind of sold off. So Boston Red Sox, they'll be last place. I'm gonna go the Orioles fourth. I think that
they're. You so want to say Toronto, though, don't you?
I do. I do want to say Toronto. I do. I'm not. Baltimore will be very, very close behind Toronto. I would say Toronto is my third place team. They'll be right on the edge of the of being, you know, third place in this division, but I think they're just not quite there yet. Now, again, if they make a move at the deadline and they do, let's just say they acquire Corbin Burns from Milwaukee, different story. And I'm going to switch that real fast and put Baltimore third in this division. But as of right now, where they're at, I'm going to put Baltimore fourth. Toronto will be third place. I'm just not, like I said, I'm not buying them. I haven't seen them do it. They've been hyped up to, you know, for years to challenge for the division crown, and they haven't done it yet. So I'm putting Toronto three. Tampa Bay will be a close second behind the Yankees, and it's going to be very close this year between those two and the Yankees being first place. And I feel like I need to go take a shower now after just saying that.
It's okay, bro.
Johnny, we know who you got at one, so go ahead and fill out the rest of the order.
I got Tampa Bay two, I got Orioles three, I got Toronto four, and then I got the Red Sox in last place. I think Baltimore is going to wind up – I'm worried about Baltimore. I think they are going to try to go get Burns, because I think he's young enough to where it's not just about this year. He can lead them next year and stuff like that. So I like Baltimore finishing third.
He is this year's Luis Castillo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually like him better than Castillo, but I hear what you're saying. I agree. Burns is nasty, bro. Burns is nasty.
So is Castillo, though.
Yeah, he is.
Scott, who you got here in this division?
I seriously want to put Tampa Bay one, but I'm going to stick with the Yankees one. I'm going to go Tampa Bay a close second, Baltimore third, Toronto fourth, Red Sox fifth. I think the bottom's about ready to fall out in Toronto. They don't start winning here pretty soon. It's going to fall out.
Oh. Could you see them selling off pieces if the season goes bad by the trade deadline? Can you see – not Vlad or anything like that, but can they get rid of –
Riggio?
Will they trade a George Springer or Berrios or something like that at the trade deadline?
I think Berrios could be a trade candidate, but I think he's got a huge, huge contract, though. So I don't know if anybody's going to want him if he's a struggling pitcher. So,
yeah, I don't think you can sell off this year. Unless they're 15 plus games out and they're just completely like they are so far behind. Right. I don't think they're going to be that, though. I think they'll be within 10 games and kind of hanging around. They'll be within the wild card. They'll be within about five games of the wild card that they're just going to sit there and say, hey, we're in it still. We're not going to sell pieces. So if they were completely out of it, I could see them make some moves. I could see a George Springer trade happening. I just don't think they're going to be that far out of the wild card or out of the division to sit there and justify making that trade.
Right. I love baseball, man. I'm so glad baseball season's here, bro.
So, Here's mine last. I got the Red Sox dead last. I got the O's fourth. And third, I got the Rays. And I'm buying in on the Toronto Blue Jays one last time, baby. So I got the Blue Jays two, and I got the Yankees at one. So maybe the Blue Jays, this is it, right? If this is it, this is the year. This is the year that maybe they go get the pitching. Maybe they go get the pitching.
You're going to have to, I think.
I think they can slug their way. Jonathan, before we let you get out of here, before we close up shop tonight, how was this weekend's festivities, games, how'd the games go, and what you got going on this weekend?
Games were fine this weekend. Again, it was a learning experience for what we had for our girls. So, I mean, we didn't have a lot of the wins and success that we were hoping for, but it's a process. That's what we continue to preach to these kids. Hey, you got to have to continue working to get better. You're not going to be handed success. It takes time to build and be able to grow. So as far as this weekend, like I say, we take positives and we learn from the negatives. Throughout this week, again, it's Easter weekend. We have a one-day tournament being played for this weekend. So we'll get to have games on Saturday, which by all means I love. As long as if we have baseball and softball games going on the weekend, I'm going to be very happy. But we'll have we have two of my teams, my baseball team and one of my softball teams playing this weekend. Everybody else gets the weekend off and enjoy the full weekend of Easter. We'll have games going on Saturday, and then we get to relax and enjoy some family time on Sunday. And that's what I'm hoping to be able to do, is enjoy it and enjoy a nice, relaxing weekend when it's all said and done.
Nice.
Hey, best of luck to you, Jonathan. We'll talk to you next Monday, brother.
Always nice talking to you, John, man. Have a good night, bro.
Same here with y'all, fellas. Appreciate it.
Take care.
And Scott, hey, where can everybody catch you at? When's the next episode of the B-rated show, the Scott Cope Show? And thank the nurses for letting you hang out late tonight.
The nurses are looking for me now. So I think we moved the Scott Cope Show to Saturday, because I think
I'm ratings were so low during the week. Had to bump it to Saturday.
I had to. And I'm going to be calling the big shots pretty soon to get on the show. So. So tomorrow is the baseball show with Jonathan and Dan Carubia and Alan at 4 o'clock Eastern, I believe.
Nice.
Wednesday morning was that the new morning show, myself and Alan, talking about the news that's going on now, baseball, talk about the NCAA championship game and stuff like that. And then Dan's got some plans for me. I'm not sure where he's putting me or what days he's putting me. But
the plan is don't die, Scott. That's the plan.
He said the plan was to catch Johnny Cruz if I could. So
impossible.
Yeah, good luck with that one, bro. And tell the nurses to, you know what I'm saying? Tell the nurses to make sure that they, use some extra soap during those sponge baths that they give me.
And then in the hoops on Saturday with JG and probably a special host this week. Because Tam's in Milwaukee having Chinese food and whiskey, so.
Nice.
Cheese curds and whiskey, not Chinese food.
True that.
And Johnny, what's the next of your 8,000th show that you got going?
Well, I just found out I don't have the Scott Cope Show tomorrow, so I got Tuesday off. So Wednesday, it's a let's talk.
What are you gonna do with your life? No show on a Tuesday. What? No show during the week. Jeez, no, what are you gonna do? Wife ain't gonna know what the hell to do with you.
She ain't. She's gonna tell me to go away so she can keep watching her ID channel.
And you're gonna have to find a new show, the Johnny Cruz Tuesday Part Two show.
I hear that Johnny's gonna practice. He's gonna sit in that seat tomorrow night and just talk to nobody.
No, I'm staying the hell out of this room, bro. It's hot as hell in this room. Nothing going on tomorrow. I got Let's Talk Miami Dolphins with my boy Alex, co-hosting with me on Wednesday. We may have a guest on Wednesday, but Dan is hooking something up in the next couple weeks with a former player. I can't freaking wait, man. It's awesome. Shout out to Dan Harris, the super producer behind the scenes. Thursday night, of course, I'm on this show. You might have heard of it, The Bodkin Show with my boy Nick. Thursday night, 9:30. And then Fridays, I don't work. I went with the whole Nick Bodkin package, where Friday night is wifey and family time. So nothing on Friday night, and it's Saturday. Let's talk about it with Dan at 5 p.m.
Yeah, again, buried the lead there. Got my show on Thursday with you, Johnny Cruz. So that'll be Thursday, 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, to catch us out here That's it. I mean, I'll have a show Sunday night working on the guest. Hopefully I'll have that, be able to announce that on Thursday. Haven't reached out to him yet, but got plan on it. Thursday it'll be me and Johnny, and we'll try to book us a guest and talk a little NBA as the NBA is wrapping up and getting ready to stop. And we'll talk about the this national college game that I haven't watched at all. So maybe have to go back and catch the highlights. So, all right. Well, this has been another great episode of Buffoon and Bodkins. I believe Tanner's going to be back next Monday. If not, we're just going to load up some more buffoons like these two buffooneries. So appreciate everybody.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
Tell a friend, like, subscribe. I'm going to hit that 70s porno music one more time to get us out of here. We'll see y'all.